Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
A series loss to the White Sox over the weekend did not result in the reckoning to the roster or coaching staff that many Cardinals fans thought there should have been. And Monday against the Mets brought a familiar result. How long can the Cardinals keep doing the same thing while expecting different results? Coming up on B-Shape Daily. What's going on, everyone, and welcome in to this edition of B-Shape Daily. Brendan Schaefer with you in the early morning hours now of Tuesday, May 7th, 2024. If you're looking for words of wisdom, you've come to the wrong place. I don't have them for you. I don't know any better than you do what the Cardinals need to do to get out of this thing. But it didn't happen on Monday as the Redbirds fell 4-3 to the Mets. Mets in the new series at Busch Stadium. Coming up on B-Shape Daily, we will dive into all the dirty details of the loss, including another rough day for the offense, where this time we heard from Ollie Marmol that he didn't see the competitive at-bats that he was looking to see to kick off this game tonight. Thought we got a very candid Ollie Marmol, and we will play some of his audio from the post-game as we go along here tonight on B-Shape Daily. We also talked with Kyle Gibson, the media did, and he tried to rally the troops a little bit and kept a pretty optimistic and positive mindset. But it's interesting, I think, to hear from a veteran player who has been through the wars a little bit. A guy like Kyle Gibson has seen scuffling teams before and maybe has some insight into how those teams find a way out of it, find a way through it, perhaps, as the Cardinals are now so desperate to do after they lose to the Mets 4-3 at Busch Stadium. And the Cardinals, you look up, have now lost five of their last six games. And it certainly does feel like it. It's not one of those where that sneaks up on you. They've lost consecutive series to the Tigers and then the White Sox, and now they're at risk of dropping another one here against the New York Mets, barring the ability to win both Tuesday and Wednesday's game to salvage it. They are in last place in the NL Central. They're standing at 15-20 on the season. Five games below 500 is the low watermark. And on Monday, they, for the 22nd time of the 2024 season, failed to score more than three runs. That is 22 out of 35 times in which that has been the case. But other than that, Mrs. Lincoln, how was the play? I don't have the answers. I really don't. We thought that perhaps there would be a desire to push some buttons after the White Sox series, because that is a series that cannot happen for a team sincere about contending. To lose two of three at home to the White Sox, who are terrible, means that you've got some pretty significant problems of your own, and that's where the Cardinals find themselves right now. Their pitching is largely doing its job. It's the same story as it's been. Kyle Gibson tonight, six innings, gave up two earned runs, three runs in total. We'll talk about the Lars Nootbaar error that contributed to that being the case. But the Cardinals were able to erase that deficit thanks to their catchers getting things going in the sixth. Wilson Contreras, RBI double. Ivan Herrera drives in a couple more with a double of his own. Talk about the base running error that led to the end of that inning a little prematurely. But the Cardinals were right in this thing, and then the thing happens that, in your mind, you're like, well, that doesn't happen. Andrew Kittredge doesn't give up runs, or certainly home runs, in a give-back sort of way after the Cardinals bounced back, battled back to make it 3-3, erase the deficit, you give it back in the next half inning. Cardinals lose 4-3 because the back end of the bullpen for the New York Mets is pretty damn good, and they shut you down with Edwin Diaz closing the door. And you can't look at Andrew Kittredge and say, well, he blew the game for you. Andrew Kittredge has been as good as any reliever for the Cardinals this season. He is human and made one pitch that was a mistake that he allows a home run to Brandon Nimmo, and the Mets win on the strength of that swing. But what's interesting about this situation for the Cardinals is that when you count for granted, which you shouldn't do, but you count for granted a little bit the other elements of the team that have been going well, the base running, the defense, the guys in your bullpen who have been pitching well. I wouldn't say the bullpen at large, because there have been pieces in the bullpen that have been problematic. Of course, we told you last night that Giovanni Gallegos would not be on this active roster today, and what do you know? He's not. The shoulder impingement got him. Impinged the heck out of that shoulder, did the last couple of outings for him. And I'm not doubting that he's going through something physical. As I've tried to explain to people, it's not like Giovanni Gallegos was healthy, 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 and then, boom, has one bad outing too many, and that's when, oh, he got hurt in that outing. No, I imagine he's been dealing with trying to work through various elements of his physical stature on the mound, and shoulder is the area identified. But really, it was a moment where they just could no longer afford to have him on the active roster, so you pick a poison in how he's going to be demoted off of it. And the IL was obviously the way to go if they go in there and they say, you know, there's something physical going on here. But it really does, if you look at it, I think have the Cardinals in a really difficult strait here where elements of the team that you have counted as good, don't need to worry about them, don't need to fret about them, don't need to think about them. In games where, again, you only score three runs, because 22 out of 35 times the Cardinals have scored three or fewer on the season, and I came into this year saying, if there's a stat the Cardinals need to basically lead the league in, it's scoring four or more runs per game, which is to basically say they need to be a great offense. Because unless you're a great offense, to have the consistency to do that, I don't mean it has to happen every single time, but at a rate higher than 13 out of 35, it needs to happen that this team is consistently in that 4 to 5 to 6 run range, because so often you look up and the Cardinals are allowing two or three runs by their starter, and it's just not realistic to ask the bullpen to be perfect every single night. And tonight, it played out exactly that way with Kittredge giving up a solo home run. The bullpen, though, you look at three innings that were covered, they had a one-run slip-up, which is a 3.00 ERA. If the bullpen had a 3 ERA by the end of the year, we would be saying that's one of the better bullpens in baseball. The script is working for the Cardinals from a pitching perspective. You got Kyle Gibson for the seventh time this year to throw a 6-inning or more outing. He got you exactly 6, and it was a quality start because he gave up 2 earned, 3 in total, one of them being unearned. You're getting the script that you needed if you're John Mozeliak on the pitching side, but that script only coalesces and turns into winning baseball if it happens in congruence with an offense that scores 4 or more runs. And the Cardinals are one of the worst teams in baseball at doing it. I think Brandon Kiley had the stat. I don't know how he looks this up. I need to ask him. If anybody out there knows how I can find this off the bat, but he put out that the Cardinals and the Rockies are tied with the most instances of that, of scoring 3 or fewer runs. That's not where you want to be, and you just cannot afford to be there if you're this version of the Cardinals. Not to say that their pitching staff stinks. No, it's just they were built in a way that acknowledged the shortcomings were going to be, look, you're not going to have a bunch of guys with a 2 ERA, and what pitching staff really does, let's be honest. But you're going to have guys that the goal is to get them through 6-plus innings so that you can, when you use your relief pitchers, have them a little more rested, a little more ready to go, and thereby, hopefully, more effective when they do pitch. The roster, I will continue to repeat, was designed for a top 10, at minimum top 12 offense, if this team was going to be a contender. Cardinals in ERA are right in the middle of the pack, about 3.9 ERA. It was 3.93 before today. Maybe that went down a little bit, allowing just 3 runs over 9 innings, earned runs, I should say. We'll talk about the Lars Nupar error. Let's go ahead and begin with that, because Kyle Gibson was good. He started really strong. I was driving into the stadium because I do my radio show on KTGR at home, and I was still in the car as I was parking and the top of the first inning was getting underway. And he went into the third pitch of that second at bat with a chance to strike that guy out on 3 pitches. It ended up being a foul ball there instead. And then he got the strikeout, I think, a pitch or two later. But I was sitting there going, I almost hope he doesn't throw an immaculate inning here, because I'm not going to be in my press box seat quick enough to write that story. I was kind of panicking a little bit thinking, If he strikes out the second guy on three pitches like he did the first guy, this could get dicey in a hurry. For me, as a writer covering the Cardinals, not being in the press box right away. But he got Brandon Nimmo, the first batter of the game, on a changeup, which Kyle said after the game was the only good changeup he threw all night. And maybe that was a bugaboo for him because it's a pitch that when you throw it early and it looks exactly the way you wanted it to and it gets the reaction from the hitter that you wanted to see, then you kind of chase that the rest of the game. And when he would go to it, it just wasn't necessarily the pitch that was doing it for him beyond that. And he threw one, he said, to DJ Stewart later on in that first inning, and he took it the other way on him, and that ended up going for an RBI hit. But Gibby was sailing along thereafter until he got to the fifth inning, and really this was an inning that didn't need to turn into the crooked number that it did for the New York Mets, but the Cardinals have an error come back to bite them as inning opens up with a Tomas Nito base hit, and then Brandon Nimmo hits one out in the direction of right fielder Lars Nootbaar, and Noot tried to come in on it, and it just ate him up. Ends up getting by him and going to the wall. I guess the Cardinals were lucky that nobody scored on that play specifically, but Nito and Nimmo just take the extra base, so it's second and third, nobody out, when at worst, it should have been first and second. I'm not suggesting that Nootbaar should have been able to get to the ball and catch it on a fly, but he was caught in between and really got eaten up by the hop, and it just is one of those things that happens. Talk about the reaction. I asked Ollie Marmol about it and the base running mistake by Herrera, which, you can decide whether you thought it was a mistake, but I'll explain what the word from Ollie was on it and talk about why I asked the question in the first place. But sticking with this error, it ended up impacting things because the next batter hits a ground out to second base. Cardinals have the infield back. They concede the run. They take the out at first, but there wouldn't have been a runner on third base if not for the error. And in fact, it probably would have been a 4-6-3 double play. I don't know if the ball was hit quite hard enough to turn two, but I know they would have gotten the out at second. And at minimum, you're looking at first and third with one out. Fly ball to the outfield next time. Okay, that probably scores the run regardless. Unless, of course, you do get the double play, at which point sacrifice fly isn't a sac fly. It's the third out of the inning. But let's just be conservative and say, all right, that's out number two, scores the run from third. Kyle Gibson gets out of it without allowing another base runner. But those two runners that got to move up and advance on the Nootbaar error both scored. One of those runs ends up being considered unearned because the second one certainly would not have scored under the way that the inning unfolded if Noot had just at least kept it in front of him after it being a base hit. So that ends up costing the Cardinals. And I asked Marmol about this as well, as that Herrera getting thrown out going to third play in the sixth, with my premise being that, look, the struggles of the offense, does that intensify the pressure on the areas of the team that have already been pretty good? Base running, defense, etc. And he didn't want to make more of the Nootbaar error than it was. He understands that the odd error is going to happen. And I'd agree with him that it's not anything resembling, at this point, a trend for the Cardinals. But I also see it happen, and the Mets get to three in that inning as a result. And in the moment, I think I even tweeted something to this effect. I can't help but sit there and think that this lead is insurmountable at this point. Mets are leading 3-0, and I said the surmountability of the lead is in question when the Cardinals are down 3-0. Because that's sort of been the nature of where this team has been. They haven't been able to score more than three runs. I had the thought process. Even if they get to three, the Mets eventually are going to score a fourth run. I don't know if it'll happen in regulation or in the 10th or the 11th or when, but the Cardinals don't score more than three two-thirds of the time. Statistically speaking, that's about where they're at. And that's problematic to be in that spot for a team that has a pitching staff where they said, we're going to have those guys go deep. They're going to give up a few runs, but we're going to outscore teams this year. That was how they designed the roster to be. And the offense is just so far gone from that that you look at a 3-0 lead and say, margin for error really isn't there to make that error by Lars Nootbaar. Should be 2-0 at worst, and in a world where somehow they turn it on a 4-6-3, which again, Mason Wynn helps you do a thing like that, but I don't know if Fermin would have been able to turn it like that. But let's say worst case scenario, it's a 2-run deficit. Well, you can come back from those, but three feels different right now for this Cardinals team. It shouldn't, but it does. And sure enough, they didn't end up scoring more than three. They scored exactly three. Herrera in the six would have been in scoring position to maybe have another opportunity to add on there after his double. And Contreras with the double down the left field line. Herrera hits his double. They score the three runs. All of them come in the sixth. It's not the mark of a good offense when you're only scoring in one inning in the game, even if it is a crooked number at that point. But the Cardinals are in a spot where it's real, real hard to give away outs on the bases. And again, that kind of comes back to my premise with the question that I asked Ollie tonight. You've got all these elements of the team that I'm not even arguing when they say, hey, these things have been good. I agree. They have been a good base running team. The data shows that. They have been largely a very much improved defensive team. But when you have a couple of those little things happen against you and it costs you a run here or maybe you lose the opportunity at another run there because an inning ends prematurely, the Cardinals, with the way they're playing offensively, do not have margin for error to have any of those other strong elements of the team backslide. They can't afford it. They can't afford to have an error by a sure-handed outfielder, a base-running gaffe, and their best reliever statistically before tonight give up a solo home run. And it's not his fault. I mean, it is, but it isn't. It's not like the whole crux of the game should swing on if Andrew Kittredge a couple times every year gives up a solo shot. I mean, you should be able to overcome certain things. But when the Cardinals have all three of those things happen to them on the same night, their offense is just not in a place where they're able to overcome it. And I think that's why I was compelled to ask that question. You know, Ollie said, hey, I understand exactly where you're coming from. That was the first thing he said in answering my question. But he's not going to make more of the new error than you need to, and I agree with that, totally understand it. And as it pertains to Herrera, he basically said that when asked about it, Herrera did the Brendan Donovan play from a week ago or so, where he wasn't sure that the play at the plate was going to be a sure score of a run, so he intentionally gets the defense to cut the throw, make sure the run scores, and you at least tie the game. And then, you probably do get yourself thrown out going to third base, but you almost do so willingly because you have enough doubt in your mind that the run's going to be able to score. Now, I think he misjudged it, and I think Ollie, in the way that he answered the question, sort of understood that he misjudged it as well, but that the explanation was that it was going to be a closer play at the plate, necessitating him to force that throw to be cut off, and that's the decision that was made by Herrera. Is it a mistake? It's not a boneheaded mistake because he was thinking, hey, here's what I was thinking. It's just a misjudgment of a play because I do think runner would have been safe going home anyway. I don't think it would have been particularly close. And that was the explanation. But all he said, when I get an explanation, it's something that I can live with in terms of a mistake was made, but I understand what the guy was thinking, where he was coming from. It was a mistake. You don't want to make a habit of those. But it wasn't just a senseless base running gaffe where, he just messed up and whatever. There was just his head was in the game. It was just misjudged. He judged it wrong, and I think that as a manager, you don't want guys to be playing with their head out of the game where they can't explain why they made a mistake, right? So the explanation that Ollie got from Herrera was sufficient to know that, hey, Let's try to avoid those mistakes in the future. But I hear you. I hear that's where I think, be on top of it. Judge that you probably didn't need to do it in that spot. And with where the Cardinals are with runners in scoring position offensively, you maybe want to be able to take as many cracks as you can get because it might take an extra one or two throughout the game to be able to really cash in the way they need to. But the manager, in his explanation to me, said he understood that that's what it was. It was a mistake, but more in the ilk of misjudging a play rather than just not having your head in the game. So I don't know if that makes it any different for you Cardinals fans, but like I said, I think you got a candid Ollie Marmol tonight, and that was one of the examples where, look, is he sort of defending his team in that regard and trying to make sure not to throw the players under the bus? Sure, but I also think that you got a candid explanation that was actually the way he thought about it, not him blowing sunshine and him, just kind of saying something in order to make it sound good or put some flowery language in there. Excuse me. I think he told you the way he thought about it. And he was candid tonight, in my opinion. He pushed back a little bit harder to questions about the team's runners and scoring position stature than I thought he needed to, perhaps, and whether those moments the team is pressing even more with Risp, or if, is that just a through line of an offense that's scuffling in general? And he said, look, Risp is not the problem, which is where I thought, I mean, it is a problem. Statistically, though, you can look at it, and he's kind of right. Their batting average is a little lower, but not in a way that is statistically significant. The stat nerds out there, I'm going to guess, were well within two standard deviations of the mean for what the expectation would be for a team that's hitting like 211 overall, but they're hitting 201 or whatever it is with Risp. And the OPS is actually slightly higher in Risp scenarios. But I do think this, it's jarring that they're hitting so poorly with Risp and two outs, because I think their batting average with runners in scoring position and two outs is something like 131. Yeah, they're 29th in that too, but that's a drop from 201 with Risp in general to 131 with Risp and two outs. So you'd make the case that if you took out the two out opportunities with Risp and just took the Risp chances with fewer than two outs, I wonder if MLB.com will give me that, because I'd like to know what that number is. Runners, I'm not going to be able to pull it up. I can't get scoring position in less than two outs, unfortunately. But I do believe that where the Cardinals are at with runners in scoring position in less than two outs is probably a lot better. If they're hitting 201 with Risp in general, way down when there are two outs, that probably suggests that there's a little bit of a bump when there's not. But like that begs the question, are the Cardinals pressing too much in those situations beyond just an offense in general that's not thriving? Is there another layer to it where, you know, Ollie says Risp is not the problem? That, I mean, it 131 with Risp and two outs might be a problem. I think guys are pressing a little bit. And I think Ollie is doing things to try and keep guys light, but I don't know how much he can really have that impact other than them finding some success and then that success continuing to feed on itself and breed more success. Kyle Gibson said that's not the type of thing. He's not a hitter, but in his experience, that's not the type of thing where you can turn around your season in one game. You can turn around a series in one game. He said, look, we're going to come tomorrow, and if we win, we've evened up the series, and that's going to make a difference in this series. But to say that guys are going to have a good game and that's enough to have it turn around their entire season when the season has not been going well, he doesn't think that's realistic, and I think I understand where he's coming from with that. It takes time to be able to find that momentum and that rhythm and stick with it. And right now the Cardinals are in a spot where they just don't have it. Like, it's a self-fulfilling prophecy a little bit for a team that's 131 with Risp and two outs of, yep, we almost had a chance to score this inning, but there's already two outs and I'm the last guy. So it's just like the fulfilling prophecy of a team that's about to fold in those spots. And it's not that their mentality is to fold, but I think the results are pretty jarring, right? 131 with Risp and two outs. I'm out of platitudes, boys and girls. What fixes it? What jars it loose? I don't really know. I don't have the answer necessarily, but I do want to play some audio from tonight as Ollie Marmol spoke in the postgame about maybe some of the at-bats that he was seeing early on in the game and how they weren't necessarily up to par. Here's Cardinals manager Ollie Marmol from after the game tonight.
At-bats weren't great. We did have able to string together some there. There were some good swings. Herrera took a good swing that got caught. Goldie, nice line drive to right. But overall, early on, I didn't feel like the at-bats were extremely competitive.
Now, that's interesting because you don't normally hear Ollie Marmol talk like that, right? But I think he's gotten to a point where he went to bat for his hitting coaches yesterday, right? That was sort of the vibe after Sunday's loss. And we played that audio for you. I think we did anyway. We talked at nauseam about it, hour-long podcast. If you missed it, do the Cardinals need to make drastic changes? That was sort of the title of the YouTube video on Sunday night. Go back and watch it if you missed it. That ended up being a pretty popular one, and I figured it would be. And look, you may not have agreed with my takeaway from that, which has basically been to say, I'm not going to sit here and advocate and, you know, stump for the hitting coaches and the staff to keep their jobs. Because I think if we would have woken up on Monday to news that the Cardinals had a shakeup with their hitting coaches, it wouldn't have surprised anybody. Because it sort of felt like the reckoning type of moment when you lose a series 2 out of 3 to the White Sox at home, when the White Sox were 1-13 in road games coming into the weekend, and they end up tripling that total, essentially, going from 1-3. So they win double the amount when just a 3-day span of road games than they had in the entire season. Wouldn't have shocked me to see a move like that. But Ollie Marmol stumped for them post-game on Sunday and said, I like the voices we have. Those guys are putting in the work. I like the voices we have. I think he had to almost have a different tenor to his post-game on Monday because you can't keep that energy every day or it's going to turn and sound hollow in a way. So rather than maybe have the attention trained on the coaches, which that question's not going to get asked every day, by the way. I know there are some fans who think, oh, this soft media needs to... Look, that happened. That became a topic of conversation with a good question by Ben Fredrickson on Sunday that, hey, what do you think? Do you introduce different voices? What needs to happen here? Okay, he gave his answer to that. He likes the voices. Nothing is going to change in 24 hours as to his belief in the coaching staff. So those questions have to come in a bit of a different manner. It's a dance. But tonight, Ollie was willing to tango. He was willing to come out and say, look, I didn't think the at-bats we saw were competitive enough early in this game. And there were some good swings that were taken, but there were also some at-bats that weren't good enough. And that's putting the onus on the players a little bit, which I think Cardinals fans should want to hear. Right? And I don't know how many of you, I read the comments and see how people are fed up and when they're responding to the Bally tweet or they are reposting it and putting their own spin on it. A lot of commentary that, look, I just can't listen to him anymore. I can't listen to hearing what he says. I'm more about the action. I want to see the results rather than the talk about it. But to me, if you're not listening to what he's saying, then don't turn around and say, well, it's just all happy talk from Ollie Marmol. Okay, there are times where, you know, a manager is going to have to ebb and flow in these post games. And I continue to reiterate, as I have my entire time covering the Cardinals, that these post games are not everything. And in fact, they may serve no tangible aspect or benefit in when it comes to the play on the field. There may just not be much to it. And the stuff he says in the podium after a game is not necessarily going to have any impact on what the team does the next day when they play again. But we talk about it because we're the ones asking the questions. And fans, it's a chance to have a glimpse into the way the team is thinking and feeling right now because that's the man that you talk to every single day. So I think it does mean something when he tried one approach Sunday and said, look, I like the voices we have. We don't have the answers, but we're working hard, believe it, to try and fix it. And then Sunday happens, Monday happens, and you say, well, today I didn't see the competitiveness of the at-bats early, and that's got to be something that we have a higher hit rate on, of competing in the at-bats. And he goes on to talk about exactly what he means with that. So I'm going to play a little bit more of this audio, and you'll hear a couple more questions as they get further into the weeds on exactly what Ollie Marmol meant by not seeing the at-bats he was looking for in the early going, in particular against Sean Manaea.
As the game went on, we had that good inning that you mentioned, and then you ran into a pretty good bullpen. They've done a nice job. It's hard to score on that back end. So I felt like we competed better, but it still wasn't what was needed tonight.
When you look at where this season is at this point for you all, can you take this as progress and build? Where does it need to be go from here?
You're always looking for progress, but we got to go.
And that question from Jeff Jones, I saw some different people tweeting and saying, oh, that's such a soft question. I don't think so at all. One thing that people may not realize is when you're asking a question, it's not about how you sound on TV. By the way, a lot of us writers would not sweat it one little bit if those press conferences weren't aired on TV. It actually would be a lot easier to do our jobs. But fans getting to see when Bally decides to air the press conference, which they typically always do when they have the game, you guys get a chance to see what Ollie Marmol says and hear his intonation and see the look on his face and the way he delivers an answer and the demeanor and all that can be valuable to a fan base. It's just that we're not necessarily asking, the writers are not necessarily asking the question to sound as best as possible on TV because we don't work for Bally Sports when they're airing the postgame. Now, in the case of, you know, a podcast or whatever, I'm using, obviously, audio from being in the room there asking all of these questions, and I want to have the answers be good. But it's really about the answer is my point, is the answer is the most important thing compared to the question and the way you get there. You want to ask questions in an effective way, but the answer is really what you're looking for. And Jeff said, look, is this something that, does this qualify as progress for you guys, or is this like, no, you got to go? And he said, look, and I thought the answer was great. It was short, but it was good. We always want progress, but we got to go. essentially saying, no, this is not a day where you take away the positives and pick out what you liked about it and say it was progress. It was once again, and Ollie has used this phrase in the past, it was not what was needed. They didn't do what was needed, which was score more than three runs. And I don't think that's a surprise to anybody. We know at this point that that is a key thing for this team. I'll keep playing it, though. I just wanted to get in and jump in after that particular question because I thought it was one that if a Cardinal fan is going to say, oh, this soft media, they're asking about progress after. No, you don't ask a question because you necessarily subscribe to the premise. You ask it so you can get to see what the manager thinks about the premise. And in Ollie's defense and to his credit, he shot the premise down and said, we got to go. Yeah, you always want progress, but this wasn't it.
Yeah.
When you said not competitive, the bats weren't as competitive as you like. Was it the brevity of them? Was it where the swings were?
Yeah, you don't get beat 0-0. You don't get beat 2-0, 3-1. Like, there's an identity to that. If you're going to let it eat, you want to miss a certain way in hitters' counts. I do think certain guys took competitive at-bats, but overall, just stringing together, the quality of them wasn't there early on.
So that's interesting. If you're going to miss, you want to lose that at-bat in a certain way, in hitters' counts in particular. That is so when you ask, okay, not competitive at-bats, and great question by Derek, what does that mean? Well, yeah, you're either in an 0-0 count, and if you're going to swing in an 0-0 count, you better mean it, and you better be able to do something with it, and especially in those 2-1s or 3-1 counts. And I'd have to go back and look specifically at what all the counts were and the way the Cardinals got themselves out. But clearly too much of that was happening early on. I know Wilson Contreras had a couple of times tonight where he struck out looking. Again, he is the most productive hitter in this lineup this year and had another big swing tonight. So it's hard to look at him and say, well, yeah, he's, you know, what's he doing standing there? I mean, he looked at strike three right down the pipe the second time he struck out looking. I'm not sure exactly the location on the first pitch. I think it was up in the zone, but like, you're not going to harp too much on that, certainly by name. If you're Cardinal manager Ollie Marmol, you're not going to go, well, Contreras, what's he doing looking at strike three twice tonight? Dude had a double that turned into an RBI and has been the only good hitter on this team. So you kind of have to balance it that way. But I thought it was a good answer. I thought it was insightful of, look, there's an identity in the way that this looks. I think Ollie's still got to give that quote. Let me go ahead and play a little bit more for you guys as he continued to be asked about this topic.
How much is that playing him? How Manaea pitches him?
Well, he's done a nice job this year.
Yeah.
So it's not easy to score on, but still got to beat those guys. Yeah, this is a guy that if you look at his overall ability to throw strikes and you look at his walk rate to lefties, it's high. Doesn't mean you're passive, but if you're going to be on go 0-0, just miss the way you want to miss. That's the way I would describe it.
Is that at all an example of what you were kind of describing earlier about it, like guys caught in between?
Yes. I think we actually saw a little less of that tonight, though, than other nights.
How do you get that going earlier? How do you get what you want early? What are some ways that can happen?
Yeah, there's not a magic button, man. There really isn't. I'd love to sit here and tell you the perfect answer. If there was one, the guys would be doing it. It's individual. And it's a matter of stringing it together, and that's what we've had trouble with. Certain guys did do a better job and feel better coming out of tonight's game than they were even two nights ago. But it's stringing it together, 1 through 9.
So I kind of spliced there a little bit in the response because he continued to talk about Sean Manaea as Derek asked another question about it later. I just cut that question off because there was an interspersed question about Kyle Gibson, which, frankly, I just don't think we need to talk too much about his performance because he's been the same guy for basically every outing that he's had outside of maybe the one where he gave up the 6 runs in the first inning, but then turned right back into that guy for the rest of the 5 innings that he threw that day against the Marlins. So I just didn't want to spend as much time on Gibby. He's done his job, and that's really all you can ask for from his spot in the rotation. But interesting comments there from Ollie Marmol about where they're at offensively. No magic button to push, which I think is true. I'll play a little bit more from Ollie Marmol. As I already described sort of the question I asked him, so we honestly don't even need to go there with that answer. I could have just let him tell you, but since I already did it myself, we don't need to play that. But I do want to, I talked a little bit about his response to the runners in scoring position question and whether that's indicative of a problem in and of itself, or just a microcosm of larger issues going on with this Cardinal offense and whether you can discern many differences there. But he mentioned something in the answer here about swinging at pitches in the heart of the plate, good pitches to hit and hitting them a long way, and that sort of being the crux of where the Cardinals are at. And I want everybody to hear that quote as well, because I feel like that's something we've been talking about. We've been talking about this team that has a tendency to either swing through the good pitches and just not do with them what they should. And by good pitches, I mean good pitches to hit, not well-executed pitches by the pitcher. I almost mean the opposite of that, the pitches that you should be able to do some damage with. Cardinals either swing through them or they let them go, right? And that's kind of goes back into, look, if you're in a 2-1, 3-1, if you're in a hitter's count, know what you're looking for and be ready for it and do something with it. So I want to play a little bit of that more from Ollie Marmol before we move on to hearing from Kyle Gibson a little bit as well before we get out of here tonight on B-Shape Daily.
Approach you take with runners in scoring position, but I do.
Do you look at runners in scoring position at all as anything more than a small slice of a larger truth, or do you think that those tell something about it?
No, I think there's runners in scoring position is real, yeah. And there's a certain approach you take with runners in scoring position, but I don't think an offense that's not in a good spot just in general somehow is going to do better in runners in scoring position. Right. I mean, if guys are in between and aren't feeling the way they need to feel, putting a runner on second doesn't do a whole lot. But are they separate and there's a certain approach that you take with runners? Yeah, absolutely.
Could it ratchet up? Could a team that's not feeling great and struggling, could that be more acute with runners in scoring position when it is searching? Could you find a break from that approach with runners in scoring position?
It's not our issue. I mean, when you look at our ability to drive the baseball and slug and actually like swing at pitches that are in the heart of the plate, hit them hard and hit them far, that's more of an issue than just situationally hitting. And they both have their place, don't get me wrong. I'm a believer in situational hitting. That's not the story here.
So I thought that's interesting. That's not the story here, situational hitting, because we talk a lot about it, right? Fan base, media, I feel like we do make a lot about that and say, yep, they were 1-for-6 tonight with Risp, kind of beating on that drum once again to say that they didn't really come through in the clutch moments where they needed to. Team like the Kansas City Royals, you can look at their numbers, and they're 5 games above 500 right now. They're kind of the inverse of where the Cardinals are, exceeding expectations. But OPS-wise, like the Royals are not going berserk at this point in the season with their overall numbers. But they've got a 787 OPS with runners in scoring position and two outs. I think generally with runners in scoring position, they are far exceeding. And like that might be a sign that this isn't sustainable for Kansas City. They got an 826. They have a 284 average and an 827 OPS with Risp. The Royals do. They're seventh in baseball in average with Risp and eighth in baseball in OPS with Risp. But if you just sort it by overall stats and overall numbers, the Royals are 692 OPS, middle of the pack in baseball. It's just been a pronounced difference in the clutch. The Cardinals, what Ollie is basically saying is, when he says that's not the story here, that's not what's happening here, it's not to say that they're not struggling with Risp, because they are, but in his mind, and again, I think statistically, sort of the numbers back this up, they're not struggling with Risp in a statistically significant way beyond just the general struggles that they are having as a team. They are struggling offensively, period, and it's also happening with Risp because of the things that Ollie mentioned there at the end, which is those pitches in the heart of the plate, being able to identify them, swing at them, and do damage on them is where the Cardinals are having the most trouble. And to me, that is a collective thing that's going on throughout this lineup. And where does the coaching come in on that? I'm asking the same questions as you guys are, Cardinals fans. Because that would seem to be like, hey, they had the book on Manaea of here's what he tends to do, maybe a higher walk rate in these spots, but if you're going to miss, here's what... Like, it seems as though Ollie is familiar with what the scouting report is, and I would bet that the hitting coaches are as well because they're delivering it. Ollie likes the voices. Are those voices resonating? I guess would be the question. Is there a way to measure the answer to that over a sample size other than the results of the offense? Because I think Ollie is trying things from big to small. Details of their preparation are being tweaked. But is anything right now worth trying? I think you could go ahead and throw it at the wall and see what sticks is sort of where I am on this entire thing. But that's what might be frustrating for Ollie Marmol. It seems as though, you know, he's got a handle on it, but the voices, are they resonating with the players to be able to get that prep through and allow it to turn into execution in a game setting? And is there anything else the coaches can do? You also have to be a coachable player. You also have to be a player that is buying in. And I don't know exactly, I can't pretend to know what that looks like because I'm not in the clubhouse on that level, right? I'm not on this team. It seems as though these guys are bought in because they all want to thrive and want to do well, but I'm curious, like, everybody's just kind of turning over all the stones right now and trying to see if there's anything new that they might have missed. I think that's what the fans are doing, and so you kind of cling on to that one thing of, well, this is what needs to happen. You got to fire the hitting coach, and that becomes sort of the rallying cry, whether you really believe in your soul that it's going to make a difference or not. I continue to say I don't know if it will or if it won't make a difference, but it's to the point where it's not really good enough for me to just say, well, it's not the hitting coach's fault. They don't get in the batter's box. That's true, but I'm to the point where if you said, look, just shake it up to see if that triggers something different in this offense, if it makes them feel bad for having a guy they like get fired, or if it makes them, like, I don't need to have the answer as to whether it's logical to do a thing, because it's not logical for this entire offense, minus Wilson Contreras and maybe Mason Wynn, to be underperforming in the drastic ways that they are. Talked about it on the KTGR Big Show today. I think I mentioned it yesterday on B-Shafe Daily. But when you look at not just Arenado and Goldschmidt, which I get it, Paul Goldschmidt struggling like he is a huge, huge problem for this team. But I would almost say, as a collective, you can look at Gorman, Donovan, Newt Barr, and Jordan Walker and go, those guys were 15% above average last year, all of them, between 114 and 117 OPS plus. And now you look at them, and before tonight, the numbers were something like 87 for Donovan, 70 for Gorman, who didn't play again, didn't even pinch hit when there might have been some opportunities to do so. He's not injured. He was available. The question was asked. He's just not, it wasn't utilized. 70 OPS plus for Gorman, something like 55 for Newt Barr and 44 for Jordan Walker. I mean, just drastically below league average in every sense of the word for all these players. And that's half your lineup. It's 4 out of 9 guys that were 15% above league average last year, all of them, and now all of them to a man are well below, 13% below, 30%, 50%, 40. I mean, those are the numbers. So how does that all happen at once? Are the voices resonating? I don't know. I don't know the answers. Clearly, they're not performing. We know the result. Finding a way to find the through line. I'm not sure what's left to shake out of literally just shaking these trees. Change the lineup to the extent that there's no rhyme or reason to it. You know, stop trying to make it make sense. I'd pull the damn names from a hat. I'll make a whole spectacle of it to lighten the mood a bit. You can air that shit on Bally's. I don't care. Have somebody stand in the middle of the clubhouse. Everybody get in a circle. You got all the names of the position players. And heck, do it with the positions too, if you want. Arenado, right field. Like, it just, maybe that's a little bit taking it too far. But I'm for real. You put those names in a hat and the order they pop out in, you can decide your 9 if you want based on that. Or you can just put all 13 position players in there and let it really get crazy. Try to make the positions make the most sense that you can. But just, I mean, something to just make a farce of it almost so that you can recognize, look, this isn't, what we've been doing hasn't been working. But we also, as Kyle Gibson mentioned, he said he didn't know, like, where that Jobu doll came from in the dugout yesterday, although he was the one that was kind of playing around with it or had it next to him, at least on TV. But he said there are times where you just need to take a breath and you can kind of overgrind in these matters to try to make something happen, try to force it. And that's usually not a way to inspire a result. And that's coming from a veteran who's seen both sides of this sort of thing. The struggle and then sort of the way through it. So we'll play a little bit of audio from Kyle Gibson from the postgame as well, because I thought there were some interesting elements. And I actually did ask him the question of, you've been around to see this. You say you've seen teams that have been in worse situations, as he mentioned, come out of it. How has that happened? What changes that you notice that allows for those types of turnarounds to take place? Here's Kyle Gibson after the game. He pitched pretty well, but the Cardinal offense was the topic that he spent most of his time trying to get a handle on, as that's what we kept asking him about.
Rarely do you go through a season where you have, you know, a lot of guys not feeling good about where they're at. And it's unfortunate that we've probably been going through one of those. But I don't think there's a guy in here that believes any different about ourselves than we did March 27th. I know that might sound crazy, but we sign up for 162 games, and that's what we're going to do. You know, I've been on teams that have been in much worse situations at this point in the season, and you finish in a really good spot in the season. I think sometimes those statements can come off as complacency, can come off as, you know, chalking it up to bad luck, whatever. I don't think this group's doing that. You know, these guys are working hard trying to find out what they need to do to be the best player they can be. But to think that expectations for this group inside of these walls have changed, that'd be ridiculous. We know we have a really good team. We know that we haven't played how we want to play. We're not where we want to be right now, where we thought we were going to be. But to think that anything's changed with 120 games left in the season, whatever it is, that's not where this group's at.
As a veteran guy with experience in situations like this previously, what have you noticed in the past that can be a thing to sort of jar it loose for a team?
I think you get to a point where every time out you think that you can turn around a season or turn around something in one at bat or one game, and you just can't. You know, I've been in a spot where I don't feel like my numbers were where I'd like them to be, and I can't turn them around in one start. You can't do it. It's got to be over a few games. It's got to be, you know, getting to where you feel like yourself. It doesn't happen by forcing it. Normally that doesn't happen by, you know, trying to make it happen. You just got to keep putting in the work that these guys are doing. And I know, once again, maybe people don't like to hear that, but to think that we have a group that isn't working hard right now is, once again, ridiculous. These guys are putting in the work and trying to be the best version of themselves. And but to go out there and try to turn around a season, to turn around the only thing you can turn around in one game is a series, is a three-game series. Tomorrow we can turn around the series and make it 1-1, and that's all you can do in one game. Nobody's going to go out there and turn around their season in one game. So we got to try to do it one game at a time and one at bat at a time.
There's a perspective of Cardinals starter Kyle Gibson, and you hear him say, look, I think he's very self-aware and reflective of how certain comments are going to sound to the fan base. And again, I think that's a reason that as Cardinals fans, you should really like and appreciate Kyle Gibson, because he might be saying some things that you would say, oh, that's happy talk. You know, he's trying to give the perspective of where the players are at, and he even makes reference to it and says, look, I know that might sound a certain way. That might sound like we're complacent, but I really don't believe that that's where this group is. Now, you can take him at his word. You can believe him. You can say he's full of crap, whatever. He gets the game. He's been around long enough to understand that the different reactions to what he says are going to be out there. But this kind of did feel like a seminal moment a little bit, where Kyle Gibson felt, you know, kind of took it upon himself to go, look, this is an offense that has been asked about its struggles for weeks and weeks, and I'm going to take a moment, because I'm the guy standing here, to answer these questions like I mean it, and to talk and try to put a little bit of support into the offense that's struggling, rather than those guys having to say it. Tonight I'll say it for them, that I've got their back, I believe in them. And he said on the other side of that, though, that there's only so much a pitching staff can do. They can provide stability and consistency for a team, but the offense and the position players, really, it's only going to come from themselves to provide that confidence that they can go out and put up runs and do what they do. And he said, this is going to be a team that does that. And it's going to be a team that, the quote from him was something to the effect of, there's probably a lot of teams that are glad that they played us over the first 40 games, and there's going to be a number of teams that over the next 120 are not going to be as excited about facing the Cardinals, because he still believes that this is an offense that's going to, when they lock it in, It's not going to be a fun team to face if you're the opposing pitcher. So he really had some confident talk to give to the offense and did it through the interview that he gave with the media. He talked for about 12 minutes, and I just thought it was a veteran moment from Kyle Gibson where he understands the way things are going. He understands that he could have been on the wrong side of a loss tonight had it not been for the timeliness of the Herrera hit and the Contreras hit to make it a tie game. So he ends up with a no decision. But he, you know, he stood there and dove in on where he believes his team is at and understands that might sound like they're complacent, but, you know, he doesn't believe that that's where things are. Like I said, you know, you can check out more of, I think Bally posted, you know, 4.5 minutes or so of Kyle Gibson. There was some stuff after that. I'm going to post it to my Patreon, by the way. I do still have a handful, not a ton of people subscribe on Patreon, but I also don't regularly put content on there. I've always sort of described my Patreon as, look, if you enjoy my content, you want to support me, this is a way that you can do it. But I want to start putting some of the raw audio on there, either night of or probably we'll throw it up there in the morning because I do want to get to bed. As just another thing that you know, you might be able to access only exclusively if you subscribe over there. But I've really not really been pushing that too much because, like I said, have not had a ton of content over there. But YouTube membership and different things will continue to incorporate that will allow for people to maybe get some access to some extra stuff like that. Obviously, the Spotify subscription gets you ad-free, which if you don't like listening to ads during the podcast, and a lot of these have been going 40, 50, maybe an hour long, in terms of the length, that can mean a lot of ads. So just that's an aside, not really relevant to anything. But if you're interested in hearing the full Kyle Gibson audio tomorrow, Patreon, I think, is where I'm going to go ahead and throw that. And if you, for whatever reason, decide that you'd like to subscribe to that, you can shoot me a DM. I can get you set up. And I may even throw it on the B-Shape Daily feed on Spotify as a bonus episode just to make sure that people that subscribe over there are not going, well, why are you putting it on Patreon and I'm paying you over here? So that's just some housekeeping stuff that I did on the air because I'm, you know, not very good at this. So it just occurred to me to talk about it. So anyway, those are some thoughts from Kyle Gibson. You heard from Ollie Marmol. You heard from me. Let's hear from you, Cardinals fans. What's your impression? What's your interpretation of another game going wrong? This one I feel like really did come down to, again, the Cardinals don't score more than 3 runs. That's been a staple of what this team has been this year. But when you can isolate moments in this game and say a little bit of a base running blunder, little bit of a, you know, error that leads to at least one extra run scoring, and then you just expect Andrew Kittredge to always be infallible, and he gives up a solo shot tonight, and suddenly you go, yeah, those three things end up being the difference, and if you don't have those three things, Cardinals win this game 3-2, I think is the way you could look at it. But on the other side of that, it's not really supposed to be a team that wins a lot of 3-2 games. It's supposed to be one that wins it 5-4, that wins it, you know, 4-3 at least. And that's just not been the version of the Cardinals that we have seen. They're on the wrong side of a lot of these 4-3 games. I don't know how many times that's been the exact score, but tonight was very indicative of kind of exactly what I've been saying has been wrong with this team. That these are the types of games they're supposed to win, but they haven't had the offensive production to win them. And when you don't have the offensive production, that then demands winning the game 3-2 instead. And you can isolate the three different moments in the game where they weren't able to do that. But those are things that are going to happen. You know, a decision by Ivan Herrera that, like, I think we need to tie this game and accept that run. I'm going to make sure we get it by forcing them to cut the throw. You may agree, disagree, call it a mistake. It doesn't matter. That was the decision and the explanation for it. The error by Nupar, errors are going to happen. You're not going to go a full season being errorless. Even the best defensive teams will make some errors. So is that another thing where you go, well, that, you know, that can't happen? No, that's not the reaction because errors are going to happen. But when one happens in that spot, you go, I really wish this team wouldn't have made an error tonight because it cost them. But that's because their offense doesn't do its job. It doesn't fulfill its obligation for winning baseball. So let me know if you see it the same way or if you see it differently. And if you think that tomorrow around, you know, 3 p.m., they should be airing live from the clubhouse on Bally Sports Midwest, the drawing names from a hat segment as they decide the lineup for the day. Let me know what you think of that. Subscribe to this channel. YouTube.com/@BSchaefer12, Brendan Schaefer, St. Louis Cardinals writer. The red subscribe button in the lower right-hand corner of your screen gets you our content. Make sure you click that bell as well so you get notifications anytime we put out something new. And there will be a lot of things new, except for starting Thursday, And I'll still maybe be able to put up some old content. I'm doing Hot Take Central on Wednesday. Mark your calendars. Jimmy the Cat Hayes and company on Hot Take Central. I believe I'll be there on Wednesday this week instead of Friday because I am going out of town. I will be in a wedding over the weekend, which means the Milwaukee Brewers series, you'll largely be on your own. I'll try to see if there's any updates I can provide, but I'll be not really watching very closely as a best man in a wedding. So going to continue to mention this at the end of each podcast. I don't want to inundate people with it, but when you're like, whoa, what happened to Brendan? He's lazy. I'm in a wedding. This was planned months and months and months and months ago, and it is going to be what it is. So hopefully they don't go crazy or fire anybody over the weekend because I will not be in a position to maximize our content over such topics. So anyway, that's going to do it for this edition of the show. Thank you guys so much for listening, and we'll talk to you next time on Be Safe Daily. Peace.